The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Let's dive right in, beginning with legal news. Former President Donald Trump is blasting a revised indictment against him as shocking and as a direct assault on democracy. Trump fired off that response on social media late yesterday, just hours after he was indicted, once again, over his efforts to overturn his 2020 presidential election loss. That effort culminated in the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Yesterday, special counsel Jack Smith filed a superseding indictment, which was voted on and returned by a new federal grand jury. It included the same four charges that Trump faced in the original indictment, which was filed last August.
There's almost no legitimate legal purpose to Jack Smith bringing this superseding indictment at this point, because the issues that were raised by the Supreme Court with the immunity ruling needed to be litigated by the trial judge anyway, and they could have certainly done that with the existing indictment. So this seems like a pure headline grab, in my opinion, during the heart of the campaign season.
They want these headlines, right?
Absolutely. There's, again, no chance that this case is going to trial before the election. There are still so many challenges that need to be looked at with this case. And of course, if Donald Trump is elected, this could very well be Jack Smith's final act at all in these cases. So I think that this was a last ditch effort to bring this to the forefront of the headlines again. So certainly it seems like a direct attempt to interfere with the election, which is so ironic in a case that is alleging that Donald Trump did the same thing. I don't think that there's any sort of hiding the fact that this is purely for political purposes, especially with regard to the J6 case.
We are just 9 days out from early voting beginning. And special counsel Jack Smith has indicted former President Donald Trump again in his dropped January 6th case.
Well, on one sense, Maria, it's sort of shocking, but on the other hand, it's not, because this is clearly an ongoing effort by the Kamala Harris, Joe Biden administration's Department of Justice to engage in lawfare against President Trump. I totally agree that this is a case that's not going to get tried anywhere near the November election. So why are you wasting time dealing with this? Keep in mind that think about the millions of dollars, Maria, that are being spent on this prosecution of Donald Trump that could be better allocated to actually keeping violent street thugs off our streets. So it's really quite shocking. And again, yeah, we know what this is all about. This is about getting Trump.
Get Trump. It's like these people, some of them, you wonder if they're possessed. They just will not let go. I mean, here we are, what is it, 68 days until the presidential election? It has no chance. The Supreme Court intervenes, helps out Donald Trump, gives him some immunity, and then Jack Smith, not to be deterred, I mean, he revises the indictments, comes forward, and as you heard there, he is basically accusing Trump of interfering in an election, when that's exactly what the deep state is doing here. As I say, just 68 days out. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at trumpetdaily.com and also at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. If you hit the Rumble channel, make sure that you give us a thumbs up and a nice comment to go with. You can email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. And so, more election interference. Yesterday, I drew attention to this particular issue of the Trumpet magazine. This is January of last year, January 2023. And of course, I gave you the opening lines. You know, that here you've got Donald Trump standing virtually alone, and that's beginning to change as RFK and others are boarding the Trump train. But still, look at these obsessed people, just totally deranged in their thinking. All things Trump. We just got to get Trump. We couldn't assassinate him. Let's go back to lawfare. You know, this article, the Ready for War issue, it's got a little It's got a little section in there on vulnerabilities, the software. This is for our elections, U.S. elections. It used to be that Democrats across the board were sounding the alarms about how vulnerable we were because of the hardware, because of the software, because of the hackers that could get in there, because of the fact that in so many cases, these computers are connected to the internet. And then you've got all the other things that we saw in 2020, the mules, the drop boxes, the ballot harvesting, the mail-in ballots. It's not going to happen quite as much as it did in 2020 this time around. But still, you've got states like California where they're mailing out millions and millions of ballots. It's perfect for cheating. It's the perfect storm for cheating. And that's what they're getting ready to do. That's why there's so many, leaving aside the lawfare against Trump to try to put him in prison, or as the person said there in the cold open, it's just to grab another headline. Look at this man. He's just being indicted one after another after another. How could anyone vote for him as president? Well, they've already seen how the lawfare has backfired. And yet here they come, as I say, almost as if possessed. Let's just do it again. Never mind the Supreme Court. Never mind that this kind of a standard, you wouldn't hold any other former president to this kind of a standard. It's all aimed at stopping Donald Trump. Listen to, you know, it's easy to pick on Morning Joe. There are daily meltdowns, but I don't see as many clips from Lawrence O'Donnell. We played one for you yesterday. But listen to him as he, listen to this reasoning. Again, thinking about obsession, if not possession, listen to this reasoning as he trashes the Supreme Court and basically the foundational institutions of America. And this is nightly commentary, I guess, on MSNBC, clip two.
George H.W. Bush is the last Republican president who entered the presidency by winning the most votes. That was in 1988. And he gave us Clarence Thomas. If you lived in a democracy where the candidate with the most votes wins, there would be no other Republican justice currently serving on the Supreme Court. Clarence Thomas would be the only one. The current composition of the Supreme Court stands, in my view and in my view alone, as a stain on America's claim to the world that it is a democracy. In no other democracy in the 21st century would 7 out of the 50 states decide presidential elections through an electoral contrivance created in a slaveholding country 235 years ago, a contrivance they tried to make sound serious by calling it a college. The Electoral College.
Forget about Trump being a threat to democracy. In his mind, democracy's already ended. There is no democracy. We're not living in democracy. The Supreme Court's illegitimate. The Electoral College, I mean, it was flawed from the beginning because, well, the founders were slave owners. You got to throw in slavery, too. These people, they hate their country. They hate things like states' rights. They hate the fact that they can't just harvest tens of millions of votes in California, and that can just kind of carry the whole country to the bluest of blue unions. They hate the fact that there are some states that, leaving aside California and all the, California, we'll get to them in a second, but I mean, they've got ballot harvesting. They've refined it to where it's an art. It's an art form in California. And think of all the prominent, radical, left-wing politicians that come out of that state. They're preparing for the steal. But they're working through so many different avenues at the moment that you do have to step back and say, I wonder if they're concerned about not being able to pull it off. Here they come now for another headline. Trump's been indicted again. It's just more election interference. This is from the New York Times. I had this a few days ago. But it says here, amid threats of certification battles and mass voter challenges, Vice President Kamala Harris's presidential campaign has assembled an expansive senior legal team that will oversee hundreds of lawyers and thousands of volunteers in a sprawling operation designed to be a bulwark against what Democrats expect to be an aggressive Republican effort to challenge voters, rules, and possibly the results of the 2024 election. It's a pretty smooth running process, isn't it? I speak as a fool. Look at what we've come to. It's going to be fought in court. And then if the court disagrees with you, if you're a rabid left-wing Democrat, a communist Democrat, well, then just use your platform to trash the whole system. They're all illegitimate. Why should we take what the Supreme Court says when you can take what Judge Mershon says in the Manhattan court or some other radical leftist behind the bench? This article says the legal apparatus within the Harris campaign will oversee multiple aspects of the election program, including voter protection, recounts, and general election litigation, and is adding Mark Elias. Well, there you go. He hates Trump, and he's a cheater through and through. That's why you see his name reappear. Whenever it comes to rigging an election, you can be sure Elias is at the heart of it. It says the origins of the effort date back to July 2020 when Walter Dellinger, a former acting solicitor general, called up top officials on Mr. Biden's legal team saying they needed to create something we've never created before. We've got to stop Trump. We've got to stop him with lawfare. Ready for war. There's still plenty of bitter affliction that's out there. You see it in the headlines every day. This was from Michigan. I just want to skip ahead here because it ties in with this New York Times article. But yesterday, the Michigan Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, I mean, the left-wing communists are in control in Michigan. So she basically comes out yesterday and says, hey, if you're going to delay certification, any of you counties out at the local level, you better know we're coming after you. That sounds like good democracy, right? No, that's authoritarianism. That's tyranny speaking. Listen to what she said yesterday, clip 11.
If someone were to violate the law and not certify the election at the local level, we will come for you. So any local certifier thinking of skirting the law and not certifying the vote, don't even think about it because we'll get.
I mean, just think about that for a moment. I mean, certify, it's a positive sounding word, right? You want to make sure that everything was done legitimately. But here's your Democrat Secretary of State, and she's there in Michigan saying, hey, if you don't rubber stamp this right away, we're coming after you. You cannot question the results of an election in a blue state because we've got a system in place to rig it. So you rubber stamp. This is exactly what Donald Trump was contesting 4 years ago. He was like, if it's a certification process to make sure there wasn't cheating, to make sure that there were poll watchers, that sort of thing, basically to just make sure it's fair and square. But the cheaters, think it through. The cheaters are the ones that want no oversight. They just want to ram it on through. And that's what they did in 2020. Thanks in large part to the courts, even the Supreme Court, that didn't do anything. All of this fraud, all of these affidavits, all of these mules on camera, all of these late night ballot drops, the 7 day election, or 5 days at least. And they told us all about it ahead of time. That's Michigan. This one here, this is from Democracy Docket. It says here that the Democratic National Committee and the Democratic Party of Georgia sued the state election board for passing rules this month that could delay the certification of election results. You know, rules, checks, balances. Democrats don't like that. They just want to harvest the ballots through, and you accept it. No questions asked. It says the Democrats, along with several county election board members, filed a lawsuit challenging what they call the reasonable inquiry rule, passed on August 6, and the examination rule, passed on August 19. Both of these rules have been pushed by three Republican members of the board who have said they view election certification not as a ministerial or mandatory duty, but as a discretionary act. I mean, these are Republicans that just say, look, if there's a certification process, we got to make it legitimate. We can't just be a rubber stamp. We've actually got it. As I say, it wasn't that long ago when you had a long line of Democrats that insisted on certification, that sounded the alarm on cheating, on hacking. It happens all over the world. This is why all over the world, they don't have mass mail-in ballots. Well, not if it's a stable nation we're talking about, because where you've got the mass mail-ins, you've got massive amounts of cheating, always, always. So the lawfare's already begun in Michigan, in Georgia. Now here comes Jack Smith, another indictment, grab a headline. The rule of lawyers. We had an article in the Trumpet 20-some years ago. We were talking about this when they were trying to stop George W. Bush from getting in over the hanging chads and everything. That was back in 2000. They cheat. They cheated to get JFK in back in the 60s. They will cheat if they have any opportunity to do it. They will cheat. They will let nothing stop them or slow them down on their quest for power. It says the DNC and other plaintiffs asked the state court to declare that under Georgia law, the certification of election results is a mandatory duty and election superintendents don't have discretion to delay certification. We can't delay anything. We've just got to, and of course they're doing all this on the assumption that they can cheat their way to victory. If by chance the Republicans win the election, then you can be sure they'll change their tune in a hurry. Now, hang on a second. We need to delay certification here. There might have been some funny business that went on. What a system. As I said earlier this week, I mean, here you have, I played a clip for you. I forget who it was that said back in 2000, the total cost for a presidential election, it was $300 million, all the campaigning and the year and a half long campaign to try to win the presidency. This year, it's something like $10 billion and all the fighting. And then you add to that the lawfare, hundreds of lawyers, attorneys that are brought in as part of this process. It's just corrupt through and through. This one here, this is from The Hill. A conservative-backed push for stricter proof of citizenship requirements for voting could complicate efforts to avert a government shutdown next month. Now, on this story, just think for a second. Who in their right mind would resist such an effort except cheaters? Proof of citizenship? A push to insist that you prove you're actually an American before you get the right to vote? Who would be opposed to something such as this? Well, the ones that want to just harvest the ballots right on through. The ones that want non-citizens voting. They're already being registered in Georgia. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have acknowledged a stopgap of some kind, also known as... Well, further on it says, calls are growing among House conservatives to use that must-pass measure to force consideration of a partisan bill aimed at barring non-citizens from voting. Here again, why should it be partisan to stop non-citizens from voting? Chuck Schumer doesn't want to do that. Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to stop non-citizens. No, invite them in. Give them a $30,000 grant in Oregon so they can get a new house ahead of the others who are actual citizens. Or give them a loan like they're doing in California. I'll come to that in a second. California's broke. California's bankrupt because of all these radical leftist leaders that they've had for decades. And they're looking for ways to give non-citizens interest-free loans on houses. They come in illegally, and we want them to have a nice home, you see? Meanwhile, the American dream for actual Americans, it's like a mirage now. It's disappearing. It says here, the hardline conservative House Freedom, again, this is the Hill, so you can expect this kind of language. Since then, the GOP's conference right flank has only ramped up public calls for the move, which has also seen some pickup in the upper chamber and among prominent figures such as tech mogul Elon Musk. Yeah, well, we want a free and fair election. We want to make sure that Americans are voting, not Venezuelans. Who would oppose this except cheaters, the ones rigging the election? The ones opening the doors at the southern border to 15, 20 million illegals. They'd prefer that all of them vote, if possible. This is from Michigan, again. Axios says, Michigan denies RFK Jr.'s escape from presidential ballot. Now think about this one. They were trying to keep RFK off the ballot initially. Now that he's off, or at least he says he wants off in those swing states, but has thrown his support behind Donald Trump, campaigning even with Donald Trump, now these obsessed people, these power-hungry people, these Marxist radicals, now they won't let him off the ballot. It says here, Kennedy said last week that he would withdraw his name from the ballot in the key swing states to avoid hurting former President Trump's chances. But in Michigan, one of the states that could decide the election, it's too late for Kennedy to remove his name per the Secretary of State's office. That's Benson, Jocelyn Benson, the one that's threatening the local counting officials or the certification officials. She threatens them. Now she's forcing RFK to stay on the ballot, thinking that maybe it'll peel away some support from Trump, since he's now endorsing Trump. You can hardly keep up with all this, all these shenanigans, all this nefarious activity, all of this lawfare. NPR says, but an NPR review finds it may not be possible for Kennedy to remove his name from ballots in some key swing states, including Nevada and Wisconsin. Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan. Yeah, now the radical leftists, now they're working to keep him on the ballot. And hoping that maybe it'll take away some votes from Trump. This is the one I skipped ahead to. Listen, though, to what Donald, this is kind of funny, but this is Donald Trump talking to Dr. Phil yesterday about the ballot harvesting. Drop my highlighter. About the ballot harvesting that California has really developed into a fine art. This is clip one.
Democrats play a different game. And you have ballot harvesting, but you also have people getting ballots. I mean, in California, you have people getting 7 ballots. If Jesus came down and was the vote counter, I would win California, okay? If we had an honest vote counter, I would win California.
You think so?
Oh, I think so. I do. I see it. I go around California. They have Trump signs all over the place. It's a very dishonest. Everything is mail-in. They send out 38 million ballots, I think it is, around 36, 38 million ballots. They send them.
It's like he's the only voice left. Well, now Elon Musk added to the mix, but it's like he's the only one that's calling for election integrity, fair elections, free and fair. Where are the other Republicans? I mean, there's a few that are insisting on voter ID, so good for them. But, you know, where's Bill Barr? He was sounding the alarm on mail-in ballots just 4 years ago. Is he concerned this time around? Is the system going to be cleaned up and perfect this time around after all that happened in 2020? If it was free and fair in California, and you look at what's happening to California, look at the streets of the big cities there, the homelessness, the drug addiction, the zombies that are roaming the streets, and then just inviting in all these criminals. There's another rape case, a little 7-year-old girl. This was out of New York City. The guy's an illegal. He's going to jail, but after that, maybe they'll deport him. But never mind those local stories. Just repeat after me. There is no migrant crime wave. There is no migrant crime wave. You heard the clip yesterday, the prominent Democrat who said, we've got to push back on that narrative because it's not true. So they just lie. Criminals are flooding our streets. I told you about that other rape case at the end of the show yesterday. I apologize, by the way, for ending on a pretty negative note. I didn't mean to do that. I just ran out of time. But the crime that's just spreading into our streets. This is from Fox News. It says skipping ahead. Lawmakers in California could soon make the Golden State the first in the country to make undocumented immigrants eligible for up to $150,000 in state-supported home loans. Now, this is just insane. What must normal Californians, who are supposed to be the only ones that can legally vote, what must they think about headlines such as this? And in particular, when California is flat out broke. California has no money left. But they're finding money for reparations. They're finding money for illegals. It says the Democratic supermajority in California state legislature is likely to pass a measure. Well, they did pass it. They needed a supermajority. They got 23 votes, 11 against. This is the San Diego County supervisor. Listen to what he had to say about this new program. Clip 5.
The state is already $60 billion in debt this year, and here we are giving money away. It's great for Californians to have some money to buy a house here, because basically the state has overregulated housing, so the prices just keep going up. But, you know, it should be focused just on U.S. citizens or California taxpayers, the people that are legally here. To give this to people who are non-immigrants and here illegally, just crossing the border, just gives more incentive for more people to pour across our borders. We can't afford these unsustainable programs.
There's one source that we found, and talking about the cost of all of this, $22 billion to the taxpayers of California. Now, I don't know if in California, I lived there for a short period of time. You know, if you throw out the number of $22 billion, does that make people stop and say, oh, or do they think, oh, well, it's just another $22 billion? I don't know what the numbers are there.
Our deficit this year, the state budget is at $60 billion. So we're putting another $22 billion on top of that. And to just give money away to people who are not here legally, who just crossed the border, who may not even have asylum yet. And maybe they were gotaways. Maybe there was someone that just, you know, came and arrived on boat and just landed on our beaches and walked in. We're going to give them a $150,000 loan right away, interest-free. It doesn't make sense.
Free money to people who don't pay taxes, to non-citizens that don't contribute to society, at least not economically. And we just hand them a $150,000 loan, interest-free. And the program, another $22 billion. With leaders like what they have in California, no wonder Larry O'Donnell wants it to just be a popular vote nationally. And that's it. No states' rights. Let's just let California and New York carry us to victory every single time. And then we can pack the Supreme Court. Then we can do away with the Electoral College. We can do away with all the founding principles because, after all, Thomas Jefferson had slaves. The Washington Examiner. The California Senate passed a contentious bill to allow for undocumented immigrants to use the state's zero-down, zero-interest home loans program despite national backlash following coverage of the bill's looming passage. Zero down, zero interest home loan. I bet there's a few college graduates that are trying to make their way that would enjoy having a zero down, zero interest, $150,000 to put toward a house. Now, that's not reserved for citizens' children. That's not reserved for the oncoming generation of actual Americans. No, it's for the Venezuelans. It's for the Hondurans. It's for the Chinese. It's for the Middle Easterners coming from all over the world. Well, you can see why they're going to come in droves. And I guess the only good thing for the other 49 states is most of them probably going to want to go to California. Or maybe Oregon's a second option. All of these handouts, all of these freebies, the cash cards, the hotel stays, the free travel. This is how a nation commits suicide right here. Elon Musk in that exchange with Donald Trump, he was exactly right. You know, the U.S. has 3-4% of the world population. If you bring in 1% or even a fraction of that from all over the world, the rest of the population of the world, it destroys your nation. No other nation does this because they're not led by insanity. No other nation does this because they know it's suicide to do it. They just keep spending money because they can, for now, they can keep printing it. And with runaway inflation, it doesn't hurt them. It doesn't hurt Schumer's family or the Pelosi's or the Bidens or the Obamas. Michelle Obama saying that her mom was suspicious of people that just had too much. She's got four mansions. So going by that standard, her mom's standard, well, we should be suspicious of the Obamas and the Bidens and the Pelosi's and the Schumers and the Romneys and some of the good old Republican boys as well. It's like they raided the treasury in Rome right before everything collapsed. History's repeating itself. We haven't learned the lessons of history. We're too selfish. We're too greedy. I mean, just look at programs such as this and then ask yourself, now, what about elections in California? Do you think people that are just wildly throwing money at illegals, do you think maybe they would harvest some ballots to try to stay in power? I mean, they have an unlimited budget. The way that these people love spending taxpayer dollars, theoretically, I mean, a lot of it's just printed. It's fake. It's not even real money. But, I mean, if taxpayers are putting it into the system, those are the ones you should cater to, right? Not when it comes to these deep, dark blue states. Just give hundreds of $22 billion, the program is. Just throw it at those that are non-citizens. And oh, by the way, register them for voting while you're at it. This is the Wall Street Journal. Americans overwhelmingly desire all the traditional trappings of the American dream: owning a home, having a family, and looking forward to a comfortable retirement. But very few believe they can easily achieve it. The American dream is becoming an impossibility for actual Americans. But thanks to Gavin Newsom and the Marxist Senate in the state of California, it's becoming a dream come true for Venezuelans. Young, single men, military-aged men, doing everything that they can to make it easy for them to own their own home. It says here, a July Wall Street Journal poll of 1,500 people, U.S. adults, shows a stark gap between people's wishes and their expectations. The trend was consistent across gender and party lines, but held more true for younger generations who have been priced out of home ownership and saddled with high interest rates and student debt. These are the actual Americans that are the same age as my children, just coming out of college, trying to find their way, trying to get by on such and such salary. And I mean, Oklahoma is one of the better places to be when you're looking to get a new home. But even here, I think I saw, and the average price for homes in Edmond, that's where we live, $400,000 to $500,000. I mean, for a college graduate saddled with debt, student loan debt, just getting into their first job, does that seem realistic? For more and more, they're just basically saying, I guess we're going to be living out our lives paying rent and not owning property. It says, while 89% of respondents said owning a home is either essential or important to their vision of the future, only 10% said home ownership is easy or somewhat easy to achieve. I told you about the price for the home we built starting in 2003, I think it was, and just how much more expensive materials and things of that nature are today. You go back even further than that, the very first home I got in my 20s, starter home, right here in Edmond. It was a home built in the 1970s, I think it was. 1600 square feet. I went and looked at it because I saw a misprint in the ad for the home suggesting it was just dirt cheap, and then I got there and realized it was a little bit more. As it was, $56,000 for a three-bedroom home. Now, again, I know that's 30 years ago, but still, $56,000 for a starter home in Edmond, Oklahoma, a nice suburb of Oklahoma City? Compare it to today. Compare it to what children, young people, are facing today. Now, it's not like it's just home ownership. The whole system, I mean, even sending them off to university in the first place, these propaganda mills, and then paying tens of thousands of dollars into debt, basically, that you've got to pay for after the fact. It would be a difficult road to go these days. And then the leadership, I think the thing that just infuriates most people the most is just seeing how selfish, how greedy, how short-sighted, how lacking in love and concern for your own offspring. But, you know, maybe in the case of those filthy rich families, they know that their children are going to have it pretty good. But what about people just living in the heart of Oklahoma or Nebraska or Kansas? They sound like they have love and empathy, but then look at the policies like what we're seeing come out of California, Oregon. Clear the way for the illegals to get everything that they want, to live rent-free, basically. Just give them cash, give them food, give them an accommodation, give them an interest-free loan. Listen to this from... This is on housing prices, I think. Skip ahead to clip 4.
A just released housing index reveals just how rough the market is, especially for first-time home buyers. It showed home prices for the nation's top 20 metro areas rose 5.4% from June of last year to June of this year, a record jump for that month. And renters, not just home buyers, are feeling a serious squeeze, especially in New York. Moody's found New Yorkers dedicated a whopping 58% of their income toward rent, compared to 27% nationwide.
But it's this issue of 58%. Now, I always thought the rough rule of thumb is your accommodation should be about 30% of what you've got left. Now, if you're 58%, you can see in New York, it's just becoming unaffordable. People just cannot afford to live here. It's pushing out certain members of the community. It is bringing in people who can just basically pay the rents. And it's very difficult to change that dynamic, Rihanna, because if you try to gerrymander the housing market, it usually goes wrong, which again is a problem with Vice President Harris's price gouging policy. It's great on paper, but price gouging is very difficult to do in practice.
That's CNN right there. I mean, if you want to maintain your grip on power, if you want to stay in power, then just wage war on ordinary Americans, the middle class. Destroy the middle class. Have a wealthy ruling elite class that heads up everything. And then if everyone else is in the poorhouse, they're totally dependent on the state. on the nanny state. And, of course, the immigrants coming in, totally dependent on the government, and probably likely to vote Democrat if you can illegally get them into the voting logs. This is from Epoch Times. The share of million-dollar homes in the United States has risen to a new high as elevating home prices keep pushing properties into the price bracket, according to a report by real estate brokerage Redfin. A record 8.5% of American homes are now worth $1 million or more, the highest share of all time. It's not because the homes are better or bigger. It's because of inflation. You've got a home, as I say, you got a home that 20 years ago you built for $250,000. Today it's worth $500,000 or more. In some of the more expensive areas, they're rocketing past $1 million. A record 8.5%. Well, I read that. This is more than double the 4% rate prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. It's just 4 years ago. California has the biggest share of the category, which the state seeing new high-priced homes popping up faster than anywhere else. The city with the highest share of homes worth over $1 million was Anaheim, followed by San Diego and Los Angeles. Well, there you go. For the celebrities and the sports stars and all of them, the politicians even, it's a pretty good lifestyle. But for everyone else, it's becoming a dream that's just disappearing. And people in a lot of ways, like I just played for you, they're giving up on it. They're giving up on the American dream. When we come back, we'll finish off today's show with a short Bible study. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Prosperity, government, trade, technology, stability, freedom. The last two centuries have been the exception in human history. How did we get here? The 19th century was dominated by an empire that exported civility, order, standards, and opened the doors for global trade. It ended slavery and implemented a system of governance that protected people's rights. And then in the 20th century, a new power came to dominate. Remarkably, one that would continue in the same traditions as its predecessor. For 200 years, the United States and Britain dominated the world stage. How did these two nations rise to prominence so suddenly? And why are their legacies so relentlessly attacked today? The astonishing truth is that your Bible prophesied the rise of Britain and the United States. It also prophesied their fall. The biblical identity of these two nations is the vital key that unlocks Bible prophecy. This lost master key to prophecy is revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's most requested book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You must understand the biblical identities of these two nations to comprehend where we are in Bible prophecy today. To learn more about this vital truth, request your free copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
Recently, I've been talking about the importance of those seven laws of success. The first one in particular, making sure that you fix the right goal, not just any goal, but the right goal, to bring God into the middle of it. You think about Matthew 6, there's so much to take away from the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. But as I was saying in class the other day, I mean, how important is it to really be single-minded in our pursuit of God, His kingdom, His righteousness? And then, as Matthew 6, 33 says, He'll add the things that you need and desire even along the way. But to bring God into it, and of course the way that that starts is in the prayer closet, in Bible study, that sort of thing. If you look at an example in Ecclesiastes, this is Solomon, who was a very ambitious king. Of course, he got off to a great start. He prayed for wisdom. He asked God for more wisdom. But then it wasn't long into his reign that he just got caught up into consuming materialism, material things, and it distracted him away from God. And he wrote about the lesson here in Ecclesiastes. He said in Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 1, "Come now, I will make a test of pleasure." He said, "Enjoy yourself." I'll read this from the Revised Standard Version. Verse 3 says, "I searched with my mind how to cheer my body with wine, my mind still guiding me with wisdom." Verse 4, "I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks." Verse 6, "I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves." Verse 8, "I also gathered for myself silver and gold and other treasures." Verse 9, "So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil. And this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done." This is verse 11. "And the toil I had spent in doing it. And behold, all was vanity." All was vanity and a striving after wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. This is what he concluded after accumulating all of these things, all of this power, this wealth. He said, well, what is it? You know, what good is it? It's just all material things. It's also temporary. It's not like you can take those things with you into God's kingdom. Solomon had some goals and obviously was an ambitious man. He was a knowledgeable man. He had zeal, but it wasn't always according to knowledge, as he explains here in Ecclesiastes 2. On the other extreme, you have people that are not motivated to do much of anything with their lives. They, like Mr. Armstrong said, they just drift. They drift aimlessly. They're victims of circumstance. They have no goals. Solomon had some goals, but during the time of his life where he got caught up into sins of the flesh, it was all zeal, but not according to knowledge. Not according to God's knowledge. He didn't have God at the center. Seek first the kingdom. Put God first. Make sure you have the right priorities. And then for those that are at the other extreme, as I say, oftentimes you don't see any kind of goal or ambition as they just drift through life. And a lot of them, you know, they claim victim status whenever they can. Or they want some other, they're in the situation or the predicament they're in because of someone else. They've been mistreated. They've been cheated. Whatever it might be. And of course, today we're living in a grievance culture where it just makes that problem even worse. As everybody, it seems, wants to claim victim status. Notice what Moses, or what is written about Moses in Hebrews 11, verse 24. It says, "By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward." So I talked in the first segment just about how much more difficult it's going to be for the young generation in America to make their way. And it's the same, really, for European young people, young people in the UK. You are seeing the middle class just being destroyed, really. But, you know, we shouldn't take any of that to mean that our whole focus and aim in life is to just accumulate things or to acquire property. God wants us to esteem the riches of Christ, the reproach of Christ, as greater riches. I mean, if we qualify for the kingdom of God and live forever and ever as a God being in his family, and then go on out to populate and to rule over the universe, there's nothing on a tiny little piece of physical property in the middle of Oklahoma that could ever, ever compare to riches that spectacular. And so God wants us to set our hearts, like Moses did, on spiritual riches. And Moses, you know, he spent time with the Hebrew people, the Israelite people. He spent time out in the wilderness alone, 40 years. And then look at the twists and turns of his life. God brought him back to deliver the people of Israel. He was 80 years old. What a chapter. What an exciting chapter for him. To work for God. When you're working for God, when you have godly zeal according to God's knowledge, then you will have arrived at the right goals, the goals that lead to success, the goals that lead to spiritual riches, spiritual success. It's important, and this is why that booklet, Seven Laws of Success, is a must read. If you don't have that booklet, call our operators today and request the Seven Laws of Success. Herbert Armstrong wrote that decades ago, many decades ago, and I mentioned how popular the United States and Britain and prophecy was the other day. This is, I think, the most popular booklet that Mr. Armstrong ever published. The 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. Everyone needs this booklet. Young people in particular. If you study this booklet, maybe study it together with Mr. Armstrong's autobiography. Get some godly education through our correspondence course or through the educational programs that the Church of God offers. Bring God into the middle. Bring God into your career. Bring God into your marriage. Bring God into your family. And you will be blessed. Those blessings come in so many other ways besides just, you know, material blessings. But a lot of times there's plenty of those too. But above all, God wants for us to aim for spiritual success. He wants for us to be close to Him. He wants a relationship with us more than anything else. You think about, I mentioned this yesterday, but you think about Jesus Christ going off to a solitary, deserted place to spend hours talking to God. I mean, physically, that's not exactly the most exciting venture. That's not exactly, you know, going off to this beautiful campground with a big camper and all the supplies to go with. He was just out there in the middle of nowhere by himself, but with God. And that's where he received his spiritual food and energy. That's where he drew on the power of God's Spirit. That's where he kept that relationship with God, just thriving. That was the key to his success, to the success of his ministry. When we're pursuing success, it's important that we go to God first for the very definition of what success is. And that'll help us then to make sure that we fix the right goal. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.